Gary Towers again from CBSSports.com. Again, it's now Friday, January 23rd, and this is, of course, the Island College Basketball Podcast brought to you by Squarespace. It's recently launched a version of its platform. Is it really recently? It feels like it's been a while now.
It's been a hot minute, yeah.
That at some point in the past 6 months, they launched a version of a platform called Squarespace 7, which is a completely redesigned interface, integrations with Getty Images and Google Apps, 15 new templates, and a feature called Cover Pages. You want to try it? Go to squarespace.com and enter the offer code FUN at checkout to get 10% off. That's Squarespace. Start here. Go anywhere.
I'm joined for this. Do you wake up saying that every morning? I mean, at this point, you got it pretty much down, man.
Yeah, we have to understand. Like, my radio show is basically a radio show of me doing that. Like, I ultimately have a radio show primarily so that I can read things for money. And so I got all of them down, Pat. If you ever want to go through anything about sport clips or AT&T, U-verse, I can knock them all out for you, like, pretty quickly. I've got it down to an art.
Good deal, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well. You guys okay?
Yeah, doing pretty well. Thanks, Sam, for getting up early on this Friday morning.
Yeah, it is Friday morning, like I said, and it's early on the West Coast. We'll just keep it at that. I want to start with this real quick, because I know it was a late night, and the night was sort of ended with Gonzaga blowing out St. Mary's. This game was, I guess, big because it's all Gonzaga. St. Mary's is always big, but they were both 7-0, I guess, in the West Coast Conference. And so even though the point spread was, I think, 15 points, which suggested we were going to get something similar to what we got, it was a game that, you know, if you were up late, you were going to watch it. And they got away from St. Mary's in the second half. Sam, I'll start with you. Is that it? I mean, that's the West Coast Conference, right? If Gonzaga's going to handle St. Mary's like that, they're going to handle everybody like that, right?
Oh, yeah. Gonzaga is pretty clearly the favorite and team that will win the West Coast. I'm not going to try and paint it otherwise. St. Mary's, their offense really abandoned them in the second half at that point. They went, well, I want to say, like 10 minutes where they only scored one field goal. And that's a credit to both Gonzaga's defense and St. Mary's poor offense. But Gonzaga really got out and really contested all of St. Mary's jumpers. They really clamped down. And that's a question that a lot of people have had about them. Because, I mean, they do employ guys like Kyle Wilcher, Kevin Pangos, who might be considered like a bit of defensive liabilities. But they really got down and really, really shut down that St. Mary's team that had been fairly potent offensively before that game. But St. Mary's isn't done by any means. It wouldn't surprise me to see them knock off Gonzaga in Moraga. But Gonzaga is going to win the West Coast. Let's not get it twisted there.
Norlander, somebody asked me this, I guess it was last week, so I'll ask you. If Gonzaga were to, you know, knock out the rest of their games, you know, kill Memphis at home, kill everybody else in the West Coast Conference, and then go lose at St. Mary's and basically enter Selection Sunday with two losses. They'd have an overtime loss at Arizona and, let's just say, a competitive loss or whatever, any kind of loss at St. Mary's. Still a one seed?
Okay, great question. Glad you asked it.
Thank you.
I think they, well, great question, whoever asked you, actually. I'm not giving you the So I would say they will get the one seed. See, Arizona is going to get it if they run through the Pac-12. Like, I would say two losses. If Arizona's at three or less, Arizona will get it. And if Arizona's at four, and that four also includes Arizona winning the Pac-12 tournament, though, I still think there's a good chance Arizona will get the one seed over Gonzaga in that situation, because I think the resume is going to bear out to be stronger, merely by the fact that the Pac-12 is going to send probably four or five to the tournament. We'll see. And the West Coast Conference will only send one unless Gonzaga does not win the league tournament, or St. Mary's essentially wins every other game the rest of the way except the West Coast Conference tournament final and maybe one other loss. That's the only way I think that league is getting in two teams. So ultimately, I think Gonzaga is going to get a two.
Well, how about this? Okay, so we talk about resumes being stronger and whatever, but what if we end up where on Selection Sunday, because this is the case right now, Arizona already has two losses worse than any of Gonzaga's losses, and that probably will be true on Selection Sunday as well.
Yeah. I still think that I still think the committee will look at that head to head, and if Arizona, which I think Arizona is going to play pretty strongly the rest of the way in league play. I mean, that was a fairly convincing win over a Stanford team I actually think is the second best team in the Pac-12.
I do too. That's a good win last night.
That is a good win. A lot of people did not think that Stanford was the second best team for a good while. Maybe that's still the case, but I like what the Cardinal has.
No. Utah's still in the Pac-12.
Utah's still the second.
Yeah, I know. I think Stanford's better than Utah.
What?
Whoa.
Yeah, yes. I'm anti that Norlander.
Yeah, I know. So when we get to the end of the day with Gonzaga and Arizona, the committee's going to look at resumes, records versus top 50, and Arizona's likely to have something like an 8-3 mark, whereas Gonzaga will have a 3-1, 3-2 mark, something like that. So that ultimately might play in more to them getting a one seed or not. There also could be the case where if Gonzaga and Arizona really finish strongly and we have other teams tumble, they could both get ones. But we would have to see. I mean, I think a lot of things would have to break their way for that to happen, because there's going to be, you know, Wisconsin, the Big 12 winner, the ACC winner. You know, there are a lot of teams in play there. But it's getting to a fun part of the season where we can really start trying to figure how these teams are shaping up in regard to that. I mean, Palm put up a new bracketology on the site today. So we're getting, you know, we have enough of a resume right now with a lot of these teams where we can start projecting. Right now he has Kentucky, Duke, Virginia, and Gonzaga.
I think that's right right now.
I think that is right now as well.
It's going to be hard for Gonzaga, Arizona to both get ones, because let's just go ahead and pencil in Kentucky, Virginia. I don't think even if they stumble, I don't think they're going to stumble enough to fall off the top line. So there's two right there. And then that Wisconsin loss at Rutgers, like, that's so easily, if the committee needs it to, is just going to get wiped away because Frank didn't play.
I think maybe, but they didn't have Kaminsky. That's the only thing.
Well, that's what I mean. It's going to be wiped away. That's what I mean. It's
I thought you meant it would be like an easy, if they were like debating one season. Wisconsin has the bad loss.
I mean just the opposite. Like it will just be wiped off the resume. They'll say Frank didn't play. Let's just disregard that. I think it's going to be hard for Arizona and Gonzaga both. I'm curious. What do you not like about Arizona? And I only say this because earlier in the week on one of the Inside College Basketball shows, or maybe it was a radio interview somewhere, I don't remember, but somebody asked me about Utah, and the question was sort of framed in a way like, are we sure Utah's any good? And I'm like, why are we even talking about that? It's like late January, and they're sitting here at 15-3. They've got a win over Wichita State. They've got a win at BYU. They've blown out the UNLV team that beat Arizona. I recognize a lot of people have beaten that UNLV team. But, you know, they beat the crap out of UCLA. Like, I don't have any doubts about Utah right now. I think they're, like, legitimate top 10, 15 team in the country. And in my mind, clearly the best team in the Pac-12. And maybe, could end up being the Pac-12 champions. Why are you skeptical about Utah?
Oh, I wouldn't say I'm skeptical. I would say it's relative to, like, I would consider Arizona a top 5 team, and then I would put Stanford and Utah, you know, maybe 13, 14 overall. I have Stanford only by a hair because DeLon Wright's an awesome player. I mean, don't get me wrong. And Jakob Poeltl, who is injured at the moment, is kind of trickled off. I think he can kind of have a resurgence. I think I just like Stanford's starting five a little more. I mean, we're splitting hairs here.
You said it. I didn't say it. You said it.
Yeah, no. I think by season's end, Stanford will have it will bear out that they're the slightly better team. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Whatever. I think they're all good. I'll tell you. I think they're all good enough and have the talent to make big runs in the tournament. Like, I'm expecting all three of those teams to reach the Sweet 16, not knowing who they're going to play tournament-wise. But I get, like, you know, it's a minority opinion with Utah. They're plenty good. I think Stanford's only a little bit better. And then I think the drop off in the Pac-12 after that is fairly sizable. I mean, if Sam wants to expound on this, he can. But the league has gone through these weird waves this year, where to start, it didn't look like it was that deep beyond Arizona. And then we had a situation where UCLA was okay, Oregon was winning enough, Washington started hot. And so people thought, and Colorado at the time was decent, so people thought, okay, this league actually
Cal won some games.
Cal
was 10-1 at one point.
Yeah.
I mean, Cal was, yeah, I mean, you can take this, Sam, but like Cal was 10-1, looked good. Tyrone Wallace is playing like the Pac-12 player of the year. They've dropped like seven of the past eight games. They're absolutely in the tank, and it's kind of signifying the rest of the league below the three teams we mentioned. No one's by any means a sure thing to get to the tournament.
Yeah, I think that Washington's probably on the right side of things right now, but basically they aren't a sure thing at all the way they're playing. I don't know why you don't like Utah either.
I like Utah.
You were talking about depth a little bit, and Stanford right now is even less deep because of Reed Travis's injury. He's out, and they basically are playing four guys that I would consider like above average players. The rest of their bench is pretty rough. Grant Verhoeven is playing, or was playing, like substantial minutes, and he's not particularly great. Utah, though, is one of the best defensive teams in the country. They're sixth right now in Ken Pom's adjusted defense rating, and they were really good last year, too, so there's no reason to really think it's an anomaly. Part of that is Pirtle, who's just terrific inside defensively, defending the rim, and he teams with Dolan Baczynski to really do a great job there and really control the boards and end teams' possessions after one shot. Plus, they do have an All-American in DeLon Wright, and while I think that Chason Randall's a really good player, he's not DeLon Wright. DeLon Wright is, like I said, a first-team All-American, probably, in my mind, third in the National Player of the Year race. And he's a guy that they can really count on at the end of shot clocks to get either himself a bucket or his teammates a bucket. And you can't really count that out enough. Plus, they get Jordan Loveridge back now. Brandon Taylor stepped up. Rakot Chapman and Kyle Kuzma are pretty good freshmen that have stepped up. So I think that team's deeper. I think they're better defensively. And I think that they're a little bit more consistent offensively because of Wright. And they're just a better team overall. But I do think Stanford's good. I don't think they're top 20 good, but I think they're good. They lost a double overtime game at UCLA that I was at that was kind of scary, considering we know what has happened with UCLA and how destructed their depth has been. But I think Stanford's an NCAA tournament team, and I think that those three are your, like, sure things in the Pac-12 right now.
Yeah, I think I think Arizona's top 10 good. I think Utah's top 10 to 15 good. I think Stanford's top 25-ish good. And I agree that DeLon Wright, I've got player of the year rankings posting a little later on Friday. And it'll be Jalu Okafor 1, Frank Kaminsky 2, and DeLon Wright 3. Let's switch gears a little bit. Last night, inside Assembly Hall, Indiana beat Maryland 89-70. The Hoosiers shot 60% from the field, 68% from three-point range. They're now 15-4 overall, tied atop the Big Ten standings with Wisconsin. They're 5-1 in the league. They got four top 30 KenPom wins. Maryland, Ohio State, Butler, and SMU's the list. Really only just one bad loss, and that loss came in November. So I'll ask you, Nordlander, how good is this Indiana team? Better or worse than Stanford?
Better, I think. Barely, but better. All right, let's get into this here, because there's some weird stuff happening here. Rick Bozich, Pat Forty, Mike DeCourcy, Seth Davis, those are four media members that I can count that I've seen. There might be more. Suddenly, like, there's this deal where the media wanted Tom Crean fired, and the media got it wrong, and it's freaking annoying when people just blast the media in general. That's fans, let alone writers. As if you polled Indiana fans right now, do you want Tom Crean as your coach for the next 5 years? Fairly confident in saying the majority would say no. It's not the media that wanted Crean fired. It's the fans, and rightfully so, you know, on my hot list, you know, coach's hot seat list that went live in the preseason. You know, I said if Tom Crean didn't make the tournament, he would lose his job. I think that's exceedingly reasonable. When
how
you
about
look
this?
At,
I'll take it a step further. It was 100 and still is 100% true. I'm with you on this, Norlander. Like, this whole idea, yeah. Like, oh, what was the media talking about? Are you out of your mind?
Dude, I do not know. Like, I don't know where it's coming from. Like, you know, in a weird way, it's like, it's weird. Like, I don't want to say it's homerism because that's not what it is, but like, I don't get this sudden change in how we're treating Crean in Indiana in the past 72 hours as if this wasn't like a freaking debacle at the beginning of the season with, you know, players hitting each other with cars and Crean's general job status being like, people are saying, like, Andy Katz on Twitter, like, and I don't mean to call out writers, but I hate it when
No, I'd rather you call it, like, let's talk about people by, we all have names.
Like, exactly. Like, if you're going to call out people, yeah. Like, freaking call them out. Like, Katz said to DeCourcy on Twitter, he's like, Crean's job was never in jeopardy.
That's
well, I
not
guess
true.
It's easy to say that yeah. today when Indiana's thriving, but if you're telling me that at the start of the season, there wasn't any sort of consternation and uncertainty about Tom Crean at Indiana, like, that's fantasy land.
That is fantasy land. Indiana was picked. First off, let's get the context correct. A bad season last season. Tons of off-the-court issues. Now, we can say, and I've said before, we can say none of them, independent of everything else, was that big of a deal. Like, even the, you know, the accident with, you know, one player hitting another player with a car, it was just an accident. It was stupid kids being stupid kids, drunk kids being drunk kids, frankly. But, we're not talking about a bank robbery. We're not talking about domestic violence. We're not talking about armed robbery. You know, the things were, relatively speaking, to what some programs could theoretically deal with. They weren't big deals, but stacked on top of each other, coming off of a bad season, they were framed as what is going on at Indiana. And then they were picked 10th in the Big Ten. And you could say whatever you want on January 23rd. Here's the truth. If Indiana was right now sitting at 10th in the Big Ten standings, Tom Crean's job would very much be in jeopardy. And guess who knows that better than anybody? Tom Crean. So, like, the idea that Indiana's instead sitting here at 15-4 and nationally ranked on January 23rd as opposed to 10th in the Big Ten standings doesn't mean anything that was suggested in November wasn't true. Nobody tried to fire Tom Crean in November. Now, except... Let's talk names. Greg Doyle was willing to fire Tom Crean in November. And if you want to say that was like knee-jerk reaction, kind of silly, then that's fine. I do think that was kind of knee-jerk reaction, kind of silly. In fact, I wrote it at the time. Nobody needs to fire Tom Crean today. That's what I wrote. But this is the season. This is where he's at heading into the season. And if this season went poorly, then his job would very much be in jeopardy. So, listen, every single person we've named, other writers we've named, is somebody I consider a friend. Somebody I've either had a meal with or a drink with or a bunch of meals and drinks with. But the idea that his job wasn't in any kind of jeopardy, no matter what, that's bullshit. I mean,
it is. And, I mean, he's in year 7 now, and he's probably going to get to the tournament, which is huge. Because in the 6 years prior, and yes, I'm aware of what he inherited, you know, the mandatory prefacing with that. But, you know, 2 tournaments in 6 years, and in their best year when they had Final Four hopes, they, you know, they got taken out by Syracuse in a huge loss in the Sweet 16. So there was, and there still is. I mean, I was at the Indiana game at the Garden earlier this year when fans were yelling out Brad Stevens. Like, this is not some sort of media invented, and pardon the frickin' word, but narrative about how the media wants Tom Crean out and wants Brad Stevens in. Like, that's just not something that media I know are actively rooting for. That
no,
just the,
like who can I, like I hate it when things like the media wanted Tom. Why would I want Tom Crean fired?
Exactly.
Or why would even honestly? Why would Greg Doyle want Tom Crean fired? Like who? Like you? You think I care who coaches at Indiana? Like whatever. I've got a better relationship with Tom Crean. Even everything that I've written, I've got a better relationship with Tom Crean than probably anybody they could hire to be the coach at Indiana. So the idea that anybody like, well, this is here's what it is. Bad season at a traditionally strong program where there is intense pressure and it with off-the-court issues, and it seems like you're headed for another bad season. That's where all that conversation came from in November, just like the year before. All the stuff was talk. It was like Rick Barnes. And then guess what Rick Barnes did? He went out and won. So he removed the conversation. But it doesn't mean the conversation in November 2013 about Rick Barnes wasn't an accurate conversation or something that reflected reality. I mean, it's a little bit like this. And Sam, like, tell me if I've got the analogy wrong. Okay. Right now, what are people writing about David Blatt?
That he sucks, that they can't get anything together chemistry-wise, that they can't defend, that they can't do this, they can't do that.
Is his job in jeopardy?
Yeah, I would say it's in jeopardy.
Everybody would say it's in jeopardy. Yeah. Doesn't seem to have a great relationship with LeBron, which is probably the key to keeping that job. And they're not winning. They're like fifth in the Eastern Conference right now. Okay, so we could all, okay, it's January 23rd, 2015. We are right now saying David Blatt is fifth in the East. Doesn't seem to have a great relationship with LeBron James. If this continues, like if they finish fifth in the East, if this goes the way it looks like it's going, they finish fifth in the East and then they lose in the first round of the playoffs, then David Blatt probably won't have his job next year. He will not coach the Cavaliers next season. Is that all reasonable? Anybody disagree?
Yeah, I think that's fine. That's not even a knee-jerk reaction. Okay. I don't understand.
Now you ready for this? What if they win 20 of the next 24, they end up finishing first in the East, and they win the world championship?
Oh, this David Blatt European experiment was great.
Okay, right?
Worked out so well.
The conversation will change because the context changes. It won't mean that anything we just said on January 23rd about David Blatt isn't true on January 23rd. But if you turn it around and surprise everybody, then of course you're going to keep your job. And that ultimately is all that's happened at Indiana right now. And let me be very clear. I'm glad it's happened at Indiana right now. You know what I hate more than anything in college basketball? The coaching carousel. So if Indiana job doesn't open, that's actually better for me because it means that you don't have to worry about Indiana's search. And whenever Indiana plucks a coach, you don't have to worry about whatever they pluck the coach from, that coaching search. So, like, I want Tom Crean to stay the coach at Indiana forever. Same way I want John Calipari to stay at Kentucky forever. Same way I want Bill Self to stay at Kansas forever. It actually makes my life easier if there isn't much movement. So the only the idea that anything, the only thing I think you can say that was written or said about Tom Crean in Indiana in November that was over the top, and I'm saying this about one of my friends, was Greg Doyle saying Tom Crean should be fired today. Like that was over the top, and that was a knee-jerk reaction, I think. And I think even Doyle would probably take that back right now if you asked him if he could. Outside of that, people framing the context of Tom Crean entering this season, coming off a bad season, projected to finish 10th in the Big Ten. If it goes that way, he probably won't be the head coach at Indiana in 2015-16. Every bit of that was true then, and it's still true right now. And if Indiana somehow ends up finishing 10th in the Big Ten this season, guess what? Indiana will almost certainly have a new basketball coach next year. I'll never understand why people can't make sense that both of those things are true. That Tom Crean is off to a terrific start in this particular season, but all the things said and written about Indiana and his job security in November were also accurate.
Yeah, would agree. I think the most interesting turn of events would be if Indiana kind of solidly got into the tournament as a 4 seed and got upset by a 13. I still think Crean would keep his job, but you know, in the aftermath of that, fans would lose their minds because it would be, you know, the rug would be pulled out from underneath them. But overall, hey, love watching the team. They're doing this without Hanner Mosquera-Perea, which is pretty impressive. They've had to go to a smaller lineup. Yogi Ferrell's been fairly consistent. James Blackman Jr., still one of the top five freshmen in the country, in my opinion. And Troy Williams is exceedingly fun to watch. So in terms of what this team is this year in the context of the Big Ten, are they the second best team? Maybe. I mean, they did beat Maryland on their home floor. Maryland's looked terrific. You actually kind of have the two most surprising stories throughout college basketball right there in that league with the Terrapins and the Hoosiers, teams that, you know, most thought would be struggling to get an 11 or 12 seed coming into the season. So it's been a fun ride, and I'm intrigued to see who really takes command of that second and third spot in the Big 10 going forward, because it's clearly Wisconsin and then everyone else. But you know, the league is down just a little bit this year as well, so that's also contributed, I think, to a certain degree with Maryland and Indiana playing the way they are. But they're certainly both worthy teams, both top 25 teams, and
it's been an interesting watch over the past couple weeks.
Remember, today's Iowa College Basketball Podcast is brought to you by Squarespace, where you can easily create your own professional website or online portfolio. It's now redesigned with Squarespace 7 interface, including integration with Google Apps, partnership with Getty Images, 15 new templates and cover pages, and Squarespace has an amazing support team that works 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Everything starts just $8 a month and includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so the content's going to look great on every device every time. Start a free trial with no credit card required. Just go to squarespace.com and use the offer code FUN to get 10% off and to show your support for the Ion College Basketball Podcast. At Squarespace, start here, go anywhere. So Hugh Greenwood had a pretty unusual postgame interview after New Mexico's win over UNLV. We were sitting in studio waiting to tape a last version of Inside College Basketball. And so we're waiting for him to throw it to us from Las Vegas. And he addressed a Twitter troll, I guess is the proper term for it, who was making light of his mother's cancer diagnosis. And it was just a pretty unusual live television moment, at least as it relates to college basketball. Nerlander, I know you wrote about it. What did you make of that moment?
Pretty interesting moment. Something we don't see very often in a post game. You know, usually those post game interviews last 15 to 20 seconds with the player. It's a few responses as you'd expect, and then they're off on their way. In this case, I don't even know if the sideline reporter for CBS Sports Network was expecting this kind of answer from Hugh, who, you know, essentially called out this random guy on Twitter who was making lighthearted jokes about his mother's cancer. And, you know, he frankly said, that's crossing a line, and thanks for motivating me to, you know, beat your team tonight. And so with that, it was an uncommon but interesting moment, and good for Greenwood for standing up for, I guess, you know, his family and the notion of going back at cyberbullying in a very small but, I think, significant way.
Sam, what... How is that an extreme example of cyberbullying with athletes, or is that a pretty normal thing? Like, clearly, it registered with Hugh in a way that that mattered, and so he reacted to it. But do you think is that a normal thing? What we saw Hugh sort of bring to national television the other night?
Well, it's not normal the way that Hugh brought it. I looked through the tweets that the guy sent to Greenwood, and I think that it was an atypical case of a guy like legitimately saying that his mother was going to die. Like, that's crossing a line. It's way too far. And I absolutely agree with Greenwood bringing it up in this postgame presser and making sure that the guy know that it motivated him to, like Norlander said, beat his team. And like I said, I'm all for him just standing up to this faceless cyber bullying that occurs to some athletes in the internet age. It's absurd. Some guys need to kind of take a step back away from the laptop keys and, you know, just think about what you're typing to this kid before. And I'm sure that this guy was doing it on purpose, trying to get a rise out of Greenwood, whatever. But this was a very, very extreme case of what he was saying to Greenwood. And I think that he absolutely had a right to respond, and he absolutely made a great statement with the way that he played.
D'Angelo Harrison is now the best bounce passer.
Russell.
D'Angelo, what did I say? D'Angelo Harrison?
Yeah, it's all right.
He's okay at bounce passing.
But D'Angelo Russell, man.
But D'Angelo Russell is on another level. Like, he's now got two beautiful Vine moments courtesy of bounce pass. He really is a special talent in regards to how he sees things develop. Isn't that right?
Sam, this is all you, man. This is your guy. This is your alma mater.
I love D'Angelo Russell in every way. I just moved him into my top five on my big board. I'll have a nice little roundup post on it today. He's just incredible. The way that, like Norlander said, the way he sees the floor, the way that, like, that play was supposed to be a lob to Sam Thompson coming off a screen from the top of the key, but Russell just saw this bounce pass opportunity where I think that Rob Doster said it best, where he just let this ball go, and it looked like a bowling follow through after he let this pass go, and it was just so beautiful and so incredible. And it's the second time he did it. The first one was even prettier this or last weekend whenever he put like English on the ball to get it to Thompson. Between his shooting, his vision, his ball handling ability, he Jeff Bowles, who is the lead assistant at Ohio State, who should, you know, probably be getting a head coaching job in the next couple of years at this point. He posted another Vine of Russell just breaking this guy's ankles on Northwestern last night, too. He has, like, everything that you could possibly want from an offensive basketball player. And he's just incredible to watch. I just wish that that Ohio State team was any good.
I will say that I was working on a story in the preseason about, I think about Shannon Scott, maybe, becoming, you know, Ohio State's primary point guard. And so I was talking to Thamada, and I just sort of, like, you know, at the end you're making small talk, and I'm like, how's D'Angelo been? He's like, he's great. He said, here's the thing. Like, he sees things on the court that are unusual for a freshman. Like, and he actually took it a step further. He said he sees things develop sometimes that I don't even see developing. Like, he's really unique in that way. Like, it's a special, special gift that this kid has. And I remember, like, I don't know, just sort of filing that away. Like, well, that was interesting. Like, he wasn't just like, hey, like, you ask most coaches, how's so-and-so doing? Oh, he's doing well, you know. But Thad went really into great detail about a very particular aspect of D'Angelo Russell's game. And I've just sort of always remember that. And you see these passes. Like, they're all, like, you know, slow motion now. You can really break down what's happening. And he is seeing things that other people wouldn't see. Like, other pure point guards wouldn't see. And I don't know exactly what it means going forward, but that's not, you know, we talk about improving jump shooting and improving, you know, this and improving that. Some stuff like this, like, you can either see those plays developing or you can't see those things developing. And I don't know that that's something you can improve on or get if you don't have it. Like, you just have it. And he seems to so clearly have it. Right, Norlander?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was pretty big on Russell coming into the season because, you know, I talked to recruiting guys and talked to the Ohio State coaches, and they were very big on what he could do and him being their most talented player. He's only proven that. Those passes that he's able to make, it's almost like he's like Zach Morris and calls it. He freezes everyone around him and he waits for the right angle. And it's just, or like he tilts the floor. It's just an awesome thing. Because the Northwestern one particularly, like, he's cocked the ball back,
right,
and he's just waiting for the play to develop. And it's almost like, defense, don't you see what's happening here? And it's still, he's able to make the play happen. It's just, it's fun because at the college level, we always have a few stars every year, but there are only one to two, maybe three in a good year, kind of players where their talent level is so enjoyable and consistent and reliable on a game-by-game basis that you want to tune in and watch them. And I think Russell has just about reached that point. He's not obviously a marquee player like Jimmer was at that level or Adam Morrison, because in part Ohio State's not totally a terrific team. But watching him play and the numbers he's putting up, if OSU is able to get a little bit better, and as we hit the primary stride of college hoop season here, Russell will be about as entertaining as almost any other player in the game to watch.
Last thing before we get out of here, Norlander, you are going to be in Madison Square Garden on Sunday when Mike Krzyzewski tries to go for win 1,000. I was at the Yum Center last weekend when he was supposed to be going for 1,000, but instead was going for 998. He got that one, then he got 999 midweek. How big of a deal is this on Sunday? It feels like one of those things that we're going to talk about, and then by the time Sunday night gets here and he's done it, assuming he does it, it'll just be like totally like that. It'll be over with. Or do I have it framed incorrectly?
Yeah, I think it's a big deal in that it's, you know, Krzyzewski, maybe the greatest coach ever. I mean, it's him or Wooden, basically. You can have that debate if you like, but you know, he's not the first coach to ever get to 1,000 wins. I mean, at the D1 level, Summit did it. There have been guys in lower levels of college basketball who have also done it. But there is a significance to a big round number like that. I don't know if Krzyzewski really cares too much about it. He might. I don't have a good sense, and maybe he'll talk about it a little more after the game if they win. Which, by the way, if they don't win, and there's no guarantees. St. John's is a capable team. I mean, they have the home game; they can win that. But if Duke doesn't win, then their next two games are at Notre Dame and at Virginia, very tough places to get a victory. So there's a slight chance that actually he could be sitting on 999 until February. They host Georgia Tech at home, and that's the surefire guarantee if it takes that long for him to get 1,000. But hopefully he gets it Sunday, because frankly I'll be traveling down to New York City to write and cover the game, and I'd like to have something interesting to write about. But we'll see what happens with that. That's the big game. GP, before we get out of here, do you want to hit on a couple of just other games from the weekend real quick? Can I get your thoughts?
You can get my thoughts, of course.
Okay. So on Sunday, there are only really three games of consequence. There's that. There's Indiana-Ohio State, which is kind of a fairly vital one for Ohio State, right? I mean, they kind of – if Indiana wins that one, I think you can clearly say they're the second-best team in the Big Ten.
Oh, I think it's actually big for Indiana as well, because, like, if – you know, like, everybody knows what happened last night. You know, they blew up Maryland. They want to see you back it with something else terrific. And so, like, if you're for Indiana's purposes, if you really want to legitimize yourself, it's one thing to beat somebody up in your home gym when you're shooting 60%. Let's see you go get one on the road, right?
Yes. Notre Dame plays at NC State. If NC State wins it, they're going to be in the tournament picture at that point. So that's just a huge home opportunity for them on Sunday. On Saturday, biggest game, probably Kansas-Texas. Would be huge if Texas won it. I don't know who's going to win that game. I don't really have a good reading on it. But the one to maybe look for here is, we've mentioned it on the podcast a couple of times because it's happened before. Kentucky goes to South Carolina. So are either of you picking South Carolina to beat Kentucky there?
No. I'm never going to pick anybody to beat Kentucky.
Sam?
I'm not. I think that Kentucky kind of does what South Carolina does, just considerably better.
Yeah.
I think this would have been like a reasonable thing to consider maybe like 3 weeks ago. But South Carolina's just, they're not any good anymore.
I know. But what are we, like, is Kentucky, I mean,
I'll say
just
this,
bored?
They've lost,
like,
a bunch of home games, or a bunch of close games.
Like,
not a bunch of home games.
Vanderbilt's not horrible this year, but Vanderbilt shouldn't be keeping it within 5 points with 3 minutes to go at Rupp. Like, do we just think Kentucky's bored? We don't have to get on this for like 10 minutes.
Yeah,
but
no, I think they're bored.
Weird to me.
No, I think they get bored, but they're still good enough to win against most everybody, even when they're bored. That's what I think it is. Like, when they got you get bored against somebody like Virginia, somebody like Duke, somebody like Arizona, somebody like Wisconsin, you'll get beat. But you can get bored against Vandy and still win. Now, keep in mind, they're a shot against Texas A&M away from losing, a shot against Ole Miss away from losing, but they're just so much better than everybody else they're going to play. I mean, and that's true the rest of the season. They're just so much better. The rest of the regular season, they're just so much better than everybody else. And I think Kevin Stallings, like, touched on something that isn't he didn't see something that other people haven't seen, but he sort of phrased it this way. He said they can endure, most teams can't endure two or three guys having off nights. You in college basketball, you have two or three of your key guys have off nights and you're in big, big trouble, but it doesn't matter to them that much. They it might matter to them against another elite team, but against almost everybody they're going to play in the SEC, they can, like, Willie can be off, Aaron Harrison can be off, Tyler Ulis can be off, and they're still good enough to beat you. And to me, that's going to be the reason that they enter Selection Sunday undefeated, is they're going to play well enough in spots to just run people off the court. And even when they play poorly, the gap between them and everybody else in the SEC is significant enough where, they're probably going to be okay. I recognize that they've already almost lost twice, but I think that I don't want to say for the first time, but I do believe now that when the question is posed, is Kentucky going to be undefeated on Selection Sunday? My answer is now yes. It's no longer, well, you know, they could be. It's now yes. I think they're going to be undefeated on Selection Sunday. Sam, have you come around to that yet?
No, I've actually kind of gone the opposite way. I think that they're just going to get bored and drop a game.
Yeah,
like you said, like, I think that, like, they're just kind of getting to that point where things are coming easily to them, even though they're, you know, they're playing tight games with Vanderbilt, they're playing tight games with Ole Miss, they're playing tight games with Texas A&M, but they still haven't dropped that game. Like, they're having off nights and still winning, and maybe they've gotten those out of their system, so to speak, but I don't think it'll happen at South Carolina. But you've got games like at Florida, who, you know, is not great, but that's still not easy to go into Gainesville.
Looked easy for LSU.
I was going to say you have LSU next. Easy. You have Arkansas, Tennessee. At Tennessee is actually an interesting game because the Vols have gotten out to 4-1 in the SEC. So I think there are plenty of opportunities for this team to drop a game. I would still say no, but I think there's certainly a chance they go unbeaten. I'm not going to dismiss it.
I am going to take South Carolina to win.
Oh, so. Wow, Norlander.
Close, yeah.
Ever since you picked Duke comfortably at Louisville, you think you can just do one of these every weekend, huh?
That's what I'm going with. But
good,
I will,
for Norlander.
You know, I will not ignore my mistakes either. I did say that Utah would win at Arizona, and that was a blowout. So that was
You decided to hate Utah.
That was a big fat wanker. Yeah. I know. I missed it. All right, real quick here. So Mountain West just has an awesome weekend. San Diego State at Colorado State and New Mexico at Wyoming. Those are just awesome kick-ass games. But there are a few games, real quick, GDP, that I want to get your thoughts on. They're kind of like games where seasons, like, all right, let's dramatize a little bit. But like, it feels like if you don't win this game, you're not making the tournament. And you might already be out.
Well, there's no such thing in January.
I think I know what your top game
but
is.
Go ahead.
Here.
Okay. Yeah, it maybe not that much, but it's like if you lose this, I'm really just not seeing scenarios where you're going to be able to overcome down the road and get into the tournament. So Michigan's got to beat Wisconsin at home, and Michigan gets the home game. Memphis has to win at Tulane, and Memphis is a freaking mess anyway. And Florida has to win at Ole Miss. Those are kind of the three do-or-die games this weekend.
Yeah, I think Florida still has a chance to get there. I don't think Memphis is going to get there, and I'd be surprised if Michigan gets there. I'm not even talking about this weekend. I'm just talking about the NCAA tournament.
Would agree. I just think if all those three teams lose, they're going to be in such massive holes. And then the other sneaky one is Miami at Syracuse.
Yep, that's the one I was thinking.
If Syracuse wins, they're going to be, 6-1 in the ACC. They're just sneaky right now. I don't know what to make of the Orange.
Yeah, Their schedule's backloaded, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. They really run into it, so they better knock this one out because it gets very difficult as they start to close.
Yeah. But, yeah. I would go as far as to say this might be a must win for them given their schedule late.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's a decent weekend. Last weekend was loaded. This weekend's pretty interesting.
Yeah. This weekend's not nearly as good as last weekend. I think the best game's probably Kansas at Texas.
And then K is the headliner on Sunday. Sure. Weekends, but overall,
the January 31st weekend is great.
Oh, it's loaded. And actually, are you gonna do Virginia Duke or what we talked about in the off season? And I guess it's not as compelling now, yeah. Or maybe it is more so.
It's Bruce Pearl back in Knoxville.
Are you gonna go there?
No, I have TV responsibilities for CBS Sports Network.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I didn't realize that at the time that I was saying I'm going. I was gonna go to Duke, Virginia. Then I found out I have TV responsibilities, so I will be doing. I'll be on television duty. Watching all sorts of basketball games. But we'll talk about that next week. Let's get out of here. Remember, you can subscribe to the Island College Basketball Podcast on iTunes. Quickest way to get your hands on the latest episodes. Make sure to do that. And either way, I will talk to you again on Monday. Take care.